What's up, y'all? It's 10 at 3 time at Tennessee. How are you? Hope you're doing well. Hope everything in your life is going well here on this Wednesday, February the 11th, 2026. Got Lord of the Streams Tom Barclay in here with me today on this, let's call it regular weather day, I suppose.
I think it still feels a little bit warm. Nice out there right now.
A little warm.
I like it, and
I was hoping that when you see, and you know it's never going to last, but when you see like a high of whatever, 67, 68, you know, whatever it was the other day, yesterday, you're like, oh man, this would be great for baseball opening weekend. And now it's going to be a little chilly.
Look at Covenant Health Park there. Looking nice. They got the mower out there. They're groundskeeping. It's going to be a beautiful start to baseball.
And of course, you know, Tennessee will play on the turf, so it's a little different, but of course, nonetheless, seeing people out there doing lawn maintenance after that thing was just covered in snow.
Yeah, well, that and the Christmas decorations, they removed those a few weeks ago.
How beautiful is that looking already with
looking great out
with
there.
Pitchers and catchers reporting and teams reporting this week in Major League Baseball. And of course, Tennessee baseball gets started. You know, softball, Carlin Pickens and company got started last week. This week is when baseball will start. The Vols hosting Nichols on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Believe it, forever we used to call it Nichols State. I believe it's just Nichols now, I think, is how it's being referred.
I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you, but that sounds about right.
People get, and I understand why, people get like really specific, like Middle Tennessee State or MTSU wants to just be called Middle Tennessee. They don't want to be called MTSU or Middle Tennessee State.
Which is interesting because I think most people know them by an MTSU.
Yes, and it
rolls off the tongue a little bit better.
And so they're trying to make it sound a little less, I guess, directional and small, but it's like it still says Middle Tennessee. That's sort of directional.
Everyone's trying to copy UT, you know, just calling themselves Tennessee.
And that's why Chattanooga, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, I used to cover them early in my career, they want to be called Chattanooga. And I used to work for the Times Free Press newspaper down there. And the first reference, publisher's demand, was the official name of the university in the first reference, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.
Yeah.
It was just, and they used to get so angry about that. And they would say, we want to be called Chattanooga. So I was like, well, first off, then if that's what you want to be called, change your name. Secondly, go to my boss because that's not my decision. These things pop up
from time to time. And I mean, it just kind of depends on how the public adopts it, right?
Like
people still call, I forget even the name of it, but Sears Tower out there. People still know it as Sears Tower, even though it's long not been the case.
No question. And there's been some kerfuffle over there at Old Missouri, they're talking about changing the name of Memorial Stadium, which of course was named after men who died fighting for this country, hence Memorial.
Yes.
And so they're thinking about changing the name of it. And so that's led to quite the kerfuffle over there, a little bit of unhappiness. That would be the corporate world, the need for money world, the need to keep the lights on world versus the traditional college sports world, which is just sort of the era that we're in, right?
Yeah.
Although the thing that always makes me laugh as a lifelong Cubs fan from my family, just that's what we are. And as you wear your evil Cardinals hat in here today. And
I thought it was apt. You know, I figured since I wore the South Carolina hat for 2 days and was kind of poorly repping Knoxville and Tennessee.
You know, you
I might as well just go for a direct attack on you.
After 2 days gaslighting the city of Knoxville and the state of Tennessee, you're now just gaslighting me. So there is nothing about the Cardinals
hat
that I will ever acknowledge as beautiful. Nothing I not, will nothing ever. I could all. Not possibly. You
I
could
mean,
not
I would,
make
I,
me.
It's, it would be tough for to ask the same of me for the Cubs.
Listen,
I do like the blue. I got to be honest with you. That royal blue that the Cubs use is very
if it
nice.
Were up to me, the Catholic Church would rename their actual Cardinals as something. You know, just call them something else. Just make up a name, call them something else. What it is in Latin, call them that. Just
some non-sporting bird, even though that was, you know, the Cardinals.
Yes, I have to say the College of
the Cardinals and the Church probably came first.
So I have to say the College of Cardinals. Like, I don't want to say it loudly, but there is
understandable.
And hey, it's you know what? I always laugh when people talk about the renaming of stadiums and how, you know, it's so corporate. How can you change things like Wrigley Field? And then I say, you know what Wrigley is, right? Hey-o, you know what Wrigley is, don't you know? It's a company. You ever chewed on gum,
like,
sir?
If they change, you know, Bush to Keystone or something like that, right? Like, I think people will be upset in St. Louis, but at the same time, it, once again, it started out.
Well, it just made me laugh that a lot of people...
I kind of agree with... Same with Sears Tower.
That a lot of people never thought that... Wrigley Field was like a corporate name, and it's like
there's somebody made this stuff that you can chew.
You do know about that, right? But we got a lot to discuss on the program today. Obviously, the Tennessee men's basketball team playing at Mississippi State tonight over there in the Humphrey Coliseum in Stark, Vegas, 9 p.m. Eastern over there in Starkville. Games on ESPN2. Tennessee, a 7.5-point favorite. I think the ESPN analytics say Tennessee's got about a 75%, specifically 74.9% chance to win that game, which you might think is a little low given that Tennessee's a 7.5-point favorite, given that State has lost 7 of its past 8 games. But I would say look at the scores there. They've been competitive. Chris Jans is a good basketball coach, always has been, plays a very rough, physical, rugged style his teams do that kind of can – They'll try to go bang with a team like Tennessee, and they can cause you problems. And we know that if you get physical with Tennessee, you know turnovers are possible. We know this about this team. Also, where is the headspace coming back from that really, really brutal loss there at Kentucky? Now, you could say, in fairness, the response to the first loss at Kentucky, pretty good. Pretty good. They reeled off some wins after that one, got the ship back righted. And I don't think anything's off the rails there with those guys at all. I think it was – frustrating night, and again, the kind of night that makes you wonder, are they going to get to the second weekend of the tournament? Could they possibly make a run? Or is this kind of dud always going to be possible? And if that's possible, would it happen on the big stage? My answer to that would be that we've only seen those big collapses really against Kentucky. Now, you know, Kansas, not a little bit tough there. Syracuse, you know, Illinois obviously was a game that was going well early and then did not go well. We've seen this sort of happen, but it's happened in the most pronounced way, I would say, maybe against Illinois and then the two games against Kentucky. And on paper, Tennessee still is a better team than Kentucky. So, and you're not going to be playing any road games at Rupp Arena during the postseason. So I don't know exactly how you correlate those things. But, you know, there's a reason why we discussed this a lot more yesterday than we'll discuss it today, because as I said yesterday, there's kind of a, I don't want to say quick turnaround, because we get out of here at 4 Eastern today, and we always get this on the podcast feeds and out there by 5 o'clock for the audio-only listeners. And for video, obviously, we get it turned around even quicker than that. But that's still only a couple of hours before the game starts. And then if people are kind of doing one of those things where they binge a couple days and they catch up, you know, that's why you're like, why don't you talk more about the game that's going to happen in just a couple hours? It's because, well, you know, it's metrics, guys. It's metrics. You talk about money, but you got to money ball this stuff. You got to know what you're doing, right? You got to know what you're doing. You got to get it for the audience the way they want it. And what they're going to want after that game ends tonight at 11 p.m. is not discussion about the preview of that game. Oh, they're going to want discussions about other things. What's going on Thursday night? You know, what's going on Friday, this weekend, yada, yada. So with that said, we will start today with, I believe, a little bit of women's basketball. Because, as you know, not a good result.
Yeah.
Not a good result. The men Vols, not a great weekend. Lady Vols, arguably even worst weekend when you're talking about the worst loss in the history of either the Batman or the Robin all-time of women's basketball programs, them and UConn. And, of course, South Carolina on the up and up. If they keep going like this, they're going to be right there in there.
I feel like you got a few, like, several more years.
You got to get a few more natties
before you start building that reputation of excellence, right?
To get into that, right? You know, it's kind of it's kind of along those lines. But nonetheless, just a bad weekend for the program. And of course, if you'll remember after the game, Kim Caldwell said a couple things that did not love. A lot of people out there on the socials did not love it. I admittedly did not love it. And if we got that queued up, as a quick refresher, here's what Kim Caldwell said after that game.
When you talk to your team after Sunday, and obviously you were very vocal after the game about what you saw out of your team, when you watched the tape, did you see what you thought you saw, and how did you deal with that with your team internally?
Yeah, we addressed it. Of course you come in and you have this much conversation publicly, you address it as a team, and I think that they handled it very well. I think that they were mad, and they should have been mad, and I think, again, I think we will get a response out of them. I think it'll stop happening. I think that they took accountability. I took accountability and just move forward as a team.
And of course, that was, I hit the wrong button there. That's my bad. That's my bad. Hit the wrong button. That was.
Don't take the blame for it. I loaded up the wrong package, friend.
The name here on the back is what it is. The mistakes are mine.
No, I own that mistake. I'm gonna be honest.
That was the part of the conversation from this morning that I actually did like. Before that, though, there was a conversation this morning that I actually, you know, there's one over the weekend that I really, really, really did not like on Super Bowl Sunday after that loss. And if we have that one pulled up.
Give me a moment here.
Because there was, yeah. She said some things about the mindset of the team and the toughness or lack thereof of that team. And it was something that criticized because I did not think that was.
Sorry, are we talking about the old soundbite from
the one after the loss.
Sorry, yes. I thought we were rolling the new sound.
Oh, that's
there.
No problem. That's no problem. Okay. No, we're going to go to the short one, then the long one.
Let me. We'll pull up that that sound from earlier last Sunday, right?
Yes, and that was from the one right there. Should be in the same folder right there.
Gotcha. I've got it right here. So let's go right to that.
I mean, we just had a lot of quit in us tonight, and that's been something that's been consistent with our team is we're not comfortable and things don't go our way, and I have a team that'll just quit on you, and you can't do that in big games. You can't do that any time in the SEC, but you certainly can't do that at a program like this.
And you don't want to, you know, go back and rehash something or relitigate something that we've already discussed fairly in a fairly lengthy manner on the show, but I did not think that was going to be very well received because it's not the first time we've heard something like that from her. And then people think, hey, is this how you really want to be talking about the players publicly? Is this the right thing to do? You know, you probably do know it starts with you, but you didn't come out and say that. And so not great, not the worst, but not great and not something that, you know, we call balls and strikes here as we see them. You know, we're not robots who know objectively strike or ball, but you know, we're human umpires here behind the plate, and I thought that was maybe could have been handled better. But I thought today, this morning, early afternoon, she met with the reporters, including our own Emily Ray Cochran, and this is a little bit lengthier clip, but I made it that way because I kept only the best answers in here. I really liked the way that she spun this forward. Here's Kim Caldwell from earlier today talking about this.
When you talk to your team after Sunday, and obviously you were very vocal after the game about what you saw out of your team, when you watched the tape, did you see what you thought you saw, and how did you deal with that with your team internally?
Yeah, we addressed it. Of course you come in and you have this much conversation publicly, you address it as a team, and I think that they handled it very well. I think that they were mad, and they should have been mad, and I think we will get a response out of them. I think it'll stop happening. I think that they took accountability. I took accountability and just move forward as a team.
Kim, you mentioned the team was mad. What were they specifically upset about? Is that kind of you want to see as a coach? That, yeah. Hey, you're mad at this because you care?
Yeah, I think that it's not acceptable in this program to lose the way we lost. And I think everyone knows that. And I think they know that. I know that. Our fan base knows that. It's not the standard here at Tennessee. And, again, you want to get a response out of them. You don't want it to be okay. It's not going to be okay. We can't go after a loss like that and just come back in and treat it like another loss. We can't just, okay, let's watch the film and let's move on. Like, we need to address some things. We need to fix it. We need to do it with a sense of urgency because we're still in a really good position to achieve our goals. But we have to just continue to fix some behaviors and change some things.
You mentioned, you know, several times, like it's top down, it starts with you. Mm-hmm. Maybe what are some things that you've changed, whether it's the coaching perspective or the players, to indicate that things are trending in the right direction again?
Yeah, I think that, again, we had one day. It's going to take time. It's going to take prep. It's going to take the most important thing is going to be consistency. And that, again, that's a top-down thing of holding them accountable consistently. I think the biggest failure that I had as a coach is we were playing really well. And I sat here and I was talking about how proud I was of their mindsets, and I felt like we checked a box and moved on. And I know better than that as a coach. They're young people. You never check a box and move on. And so I told a few of them yesterday, I think I'm a better coach for you guys when I'm just mad all the time, and that's the version that we're going to get.
You said on your radio show post-game Sunday that some of the players get it and you're going to keep coaching to other people get it. What is it?
That we play an effort-based system and it doesn't work if you don't play hard.
How do you feel like your team handles when they're going up against kind of the top 1% of players in the country, like a South Carolina or UConn? How do you get them to play with that fire as underdogs?
Yeah, I think we're still working on that. Normally, I coach players that really like to be the underdog, and I think that we could spin it more of an underdog story if we needed to, but at the end of the day, we're going to have played the top six teams in the country, the majority of them on the road. We played a very hard schedule. We played a hard schedule so that we could grow up. We played a hard schedule so that when we get in the NCAA tournament, we know exactly what it takes. I'm disappointed that the margin is what the margin is, and I think that that's, again, that's not the standard that our team... I can't look at my team, and I will never look at my team and say that's acceptable. And they know that. They know that they're not that much worse. And we're playing great teams on the road. It's not that we are losing. It's the manner in which we are doing it.
What's the balance line? You mentioned you're still in a good spot in your SEC standings. Yeah. Where is the balance line of not panicking or not going over the top with it versus – we just got to get settled back in. And what do you draw from? I mean, you haven't been probably through many of these.
Yeah.
What do you draw from to help get your team through this?
Yeah, I think right now, right or wrong answer, I draw from them. I draw from them. You have to get pulse points with your team. And you look at your team and you say, do you think you can win? And they say, yeah, we think we can win. And so you know that that's where their mind space, their head space is of, yeah, we can win. Coach, we got it. We can win. We got it. We'll fix it. And that builds confidence in a coach of, okay, you think maybe they're hitting the panic button. They're kids. They think they can win. They look me in the eye and they tell me they have that confidence, and I don't think it's fake. It's not. I don't think it's an answer that they – sometimes young people give you an answer that they think you want to hear. I don't think that that was happened with any of them.
One of the points from Sunday's game was just about not seeing enough leadership among players that you want to see. Has anyone – kind of taken that personally, even just from the loss, to be more of a leader, or have you seen any kind of change in that just, you know, moment?
I think all of them took it personally. And so we talked that we do need leadership. This has been leading up to this game that we have said that we need more leadership. We need more leadership. And I think everyone can lead in their own way. Some people lead by example. Some people lead quietly. Some people lead by talking to individuals, and some people have the voice, and we need a refresh of that. I think they know we need a refresh of that, and yeah, I think that they took that challenge, and I think that challenge will be fixed.
Do you think all of them taking that loss personally will kind of just benefit this team in the long run, and is their response something that you really wanted to see out of them after that game?
Yeah, that's the hope. That's the hope. The hope is that we can come back and we can point to this moment right now that's not a flattering moment. It's not a flattering moment for our program. It's not a flattering moment for me. It's not a comfortable situation for me to be here in the coat in this seat and have drawn attention to a failure and made it more public by my comments. But I hope that it's a turning point and we can go, well, that worked. That's my hope.
That was Kim Caldwell from earlier today. And while we are about to get to break here, so I'll say this very quickly and then talk about it again after the break. I do think you did not hear anywhere in that pump, anywhere in the clips that we showed you or at any other point during that presser, did she say, I should not have done that. My fault. Obviously, it starts with me. She did not come out specifically, explicitly and say that, but she did say that she took a situation that wasn't good and she made it worse. So That's not an out-and-out apology, but to me that is a step in a better direction. That's a press conference that you can hear and go, okay, now obviously you're not just going to come out and say sorry, and some people just aren't going to do that, and that's fine, right? A lot of people, they'll apologize without using the word sorry, and that's indirect. It's not exactly what people want. It's a bit dodgy at times, but I think if this had been sort of the mindset after the game originally, then sort of the conversation now would be different. So I think this was a better step in terms of saying, yes, that performance was not acceptable. I got too nice to them. They got too comfortable. I let them get too comfortable. That was my mistake. Now I'm going to have to be mean. And so that is her saying, that's not saying sorry, but that is saying I should have handled this better in its own way. So I think that is kind of a nice middle ground. It's not falling on the sword. It's not taking all the blame. It's not saying it starts with me. It's not perfect, but I think it is a step in a better direction. So that's good. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break, but we got to get to that. We're a little bit overdue for it, and we will be right back here on 10 at 3. man, do we have a good, I don't know if it's good, but a secret time today. This is, here's an actual, like, the first time that my wife was pregnant, I told her, I'll never, we went through all that stuff with Hank, and I said, you'll never go through an ultrasound again by yourself. Well, you'll never, I promise you that if we get bad news or whatever, I'll be there, yada, yada. But this pregnancy has been great.
Sure.
And so last time we did the ultrasound, there was only one little image they couldn't quite see. Mm-hmm. They said, everything's fine. This is just for record keeping. We just need to have this on record. So can you come back and we'll use the better machine and get that one spot? And so since we knew everything was fine, I didn't go to the one today, but it was in fact like a much higher definition one. And my wife sent me a picture just this moment, like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And that was like the first time like I saw my daughter's face.
Wow.
And I am so happy right now, but I'm also, I'm also,
I can only imagine.
I'm also so furious that my wife did not wait till 4:01 to send this to me. She knows what's
she knows what's going on
between 3 and 4. She knows what's going on. And she sent this saying, by the way, here's your daughter who will be born in a few months. Here's her beautiful face for the first time. And now try to go out there and talk about sports for 50 minutes. Hot shot.
You got it. You got this, bud.
What are you doing, Lauren? What are you doing to me?
Trying to get you a little, trying to get a little amped up for the show here.
I'm amped up.
The excitement's real.
Golly, it's a beautiful picture, though. I mean, it's like
high definition. It's amazing.
Ha! When they are not the absolute worst, they are the absolute
15
best.
15 seconds away.
They are the absolute best children. Highly recommend them. Most of the time.
Except for a certain age range, I guess, maybe. Right?
I always recommend and never recommend.
4.
Welcome back to 10 at 3. Wes Rucker and Tom Barclay here on a Wednesday, February the 11th, 2026, coming to you from the 10 Streaming Center here at WBIR HQ, the world headquarters, as the Olympics are going on across the pond and then across the sea over from that pond. Over there in Milan Cortina, those dastardly Norwegians still have a couple more medals than the great U.S.
Still hating over there, I see.
No, I do this every 4 years for about a month. I become the most anti-Norwegian person on the planet. And again, according to Ancestry, that is, I think, like 5% of my blood is like Norwegian Viking blood.
Okay.
So that's 5% of my blood I'm going against here. But you know what? I'm 5% Norwegian, 100% American. You do the math on that. You do the math on that. These colors don't run, Tom. I become so – I am definitely a person who's like – I make no mistake about this. I love humanity. I like people. I don't think there's inherently anything better or worse about us than most people from most other countries and yada, yada. We're all humans, right? We're all in this together. But when you put on that flag for an athletic competition, I just, I get into give me a pickup truck, go to the farm, get the boots on.
Sure.
Rock flag and eagle. Do some flyovers.
Playing some Billy Joel in the background.
Anything you got, man. Anything that's John Mellencamp.
John Mellencamp.
Kenny Loggins, Danger Zone, Lee Greenwood, Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
Just America. Just, like in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Rock, flag, and eagle.
Yeah, I know.
I really get like that. Pretty much only during the Olympics, and not that, I'm a patriotic person, I love my country, but especially when ball's going on, man.
Yeah.
I get like
when the competition's on, you
that's
know,
right.
You
like,
feel that sense of pride.
Like normally I would describe myself as someone who's, very patriotic, but not like in a any sort of a I'm better than you way or we're better than anybody else way, but just an I'm proud of, my people kind of way. But when it comes purely to athletics, and with the U.S. soccer team, right? Like,
sure.
I love the people of Mexico. I've been down there several times. I love the people down there. Some of the best people I've ever met were down there. Best food, just great stuff. But their soccer team, I hate with the passion of a thousand burning suns.
And pretty much everyone else in the world, too, at that point.
Just.
You know how it is.
I mean, when the U.S. Yeah. plays El Tri, it's just, it's blood and thunder. It's just, and they play up there, make you go up there and play a billion miles above sea level in that dirty air at Azteca.
We're the odd ones out in the world when it comes to soccer.
But we do get into the U.S.-Mexico rivalry. And of course, I love the U.S. national team no matter what, but those games against Mexico now, that in the Olympics, or mm-hmm. I want to see red, white, and blue and nothing else. And you might say, isn't Norway also red, white, and blue?
A lot of countries.
And I would say yes, but wrong. But the wrong kind of them, France, Great Britain, all the wrong kinds of red, white, and blue.
And stripes.
Russia especially, all these people, the wrong kind of red, white, and blue, okay? The wrong kind of red, white, and blue. That's a good segue to, hey, watch the Olympics here on NBC and
it's,
our
it's really
networks.
It's rolling, especially, you know, get to the afternoon time where they start really putting the prime time stuff up. You get the ice skating is always as fascinating to watch. I've seen some curling matches. It's on.
So far, 4-year-old Hank has gotten the most probably into the speed skating so far.
Speed
skating got his attention because they're going really fast, and he was like, okay, this is kind of neat. Other stuff, he's like, I don't know about this.
Not into curling.
You get curling, cross-country skiing, some of these other ones, you're like, and even like ski
Nordic
jumping,
trick.
He'll watch once or twice and be like, ooh, that's cool. But then he's like, this is boring.
Yeah.
Can we watch Super Kitties again now or whatever it is? But speed skating got his attention pretty good. But my point coming out of that last break was the way that Kim Caldwell, Lady Vols coach Kim Caldwell, was talking, and I think that was a step in the right direction. And of course, she also, and we didn't have time to play all this, she also had comments about, we know who they're playing tomorrow, Kelly Harper and the Missouri Tigers. The Missouri Tigers are coming Food City Center, and they've been playing much better basketball. They got off to a really rough start early this year, and it's been kind of a transitional period there. But if we had more time, I would love to have played it. But I might drop it in the show notes today at the end for the feeds. Is just watching Kelly Harper's pressers, you know, this week, just how much more relaxed and comfortable she looked. She just looked happy, and I'm really happy to see that, because you know, with her and the entire core of her being, she wanted to take that Lady Vols job and run with it. She loves this place. She always will. She has missed Tennessee in a lot of ways.
Orange,
you know, and just such a, it was such a potential feel good story, and it just didn't work out. They just weren't quite good enough. They weren't, I would say, embarrassingly bad. There is a standard at this program, and it was not being met, and there are consequences for that. And you could tell later in her tenure, it was just kind of starting to wear on her the way it did Holly, because the pressure of this job in this market with this history, the court you play on is named after one or 1A of the best women's basketball coaches of all time, right? No question.
Just best basketball coaches.
Sure.
Period.
Sure. I mean,
I agree.
And I understand that people feel a certain type of way about that. And I think it makes sense, but I don't look at them as two different sports, but I look at them as they are different in ways. I try not to compare.
I mean, Pat had a big hand in evolving women's basketball
to what it
is today. Like, there's a whole history behind that in Oak Ridge, Anderson County. You should read up on that.
Yes.
Stuff.
And I try not, when I say I don't compare the two, that doesn't mean I put one above the other. That means that I think of them like, could somebody who coaches the women coach the men? Probably. Could someone who coaches the men coach the women? Probably.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to compare, because what Pat did through her own like blood, sweat, and tears was lift up an entire sport and bring it notoriety, but did not lift it up quite to the fact where like there was parity. There were still just a few teams who really, 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 really cared. Mm-hmm. So the competition level, from a pure parity perspective, there were more teams going into the year, still to this day, more teams that can win the men's basketball national title than the women's. And you would say, understandably so, hey, the women had a one loss to a 16 seed in the tournament before the men did, right? So, hey, you're talking about no parity. Okay. But yes, but look at the overall, sure, the average seeds of the usual champions in those sports. And so that's why I say, sure, I mean, objectively, I think you could easily say Pat Summitt, one of the best basketball coaches of any gender, of any, you know, age, yeah, any size, professional, amateur,
whatever. And purely by the numbers, too, when you just look at it, just if you you know, it may not be an apples
that,
to apples.
That's why I just say one of the best, you know, she and Gino, to the two best, like, women's basketball coaches of all time, because that's – I know they were there because that's what they did. So that's why and again, people get so – and I understand why, because you got to be so careful how you say everything, just because this side gets angry, then this side gets angry, and I don't want – any of that. That's not at all what I'm going for here, because I don't even care. I don't want – there's a time and place for that argument. That's not what I'm going for here. All I mean is that one of – you know, the pressure of playing of being the women's basketball coach at this program, it's unique. Just like whoever has to replace Gino.
Yeah, that's the point.
Good
here.
Freaking luck.
You're dealing with like a legend among legends.
Yes,
you know what I mean. That's,
yeah,
and that comes with a set of expectations that honestly,
yes,
crushing.
You know,
for anybody that takes the next role, you know.
And you know, it was like replacing Bear Bryant. Mm-hmm. Now I know that technically a title was won after Bryant and before Saban got there. You know, Stallings. They had some moments in there where they still were really good, but not quite the same. And so when you're replacing a legend, like, you know, DeBoer, people are consistently not very happy with him, and he's gone to the playoff since he's been at Alabama, but still hasn't won a title. They still look like they're just a tick below the very best. So, you know, there's criticism there. And so that wore on Kelly a lot. You could tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those jobs that it just kind of, you know, people start to age a little bit more quickly. It's like when you look at like a U.S. president on their inauguration day versus when they leave. If you go back and look at like Tennessee football coaches, look at the day they were hired by Tennessee and go about 3 or 4 years later, none of them aged normally. All of them got significantly older looking very quickly.
Yeah.
And Kelly started to get, you know, tired. You could just tell she was frustrated and tired and trying just, you know, it's like when you're spinning, you know, wheels in the mud, just trying to get the thing going. And so it ended the way it did. And she goes, you know, back away, then goes to Mizzou, gets a job, a little bit more off the beaten path.
Yeah, now, I'm going to be fair about my Tigers here. The women's basketball team didn't really have much of a reputation going for them. Men's basketball team, you know.
Up and down, but sometimes really good.
Up and down, competitive, I'd say, just not, you know, necessarily, and especially in recent years, not as
correct. And need, and the arena needs a facelift and other things.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, it's, especially by SEC standards now.
Yeah.
But it's, she just looks like she's in a pretty good place right now. And I think sometimes you can have a little bit more devil may care attitude or a bit more of a buccaneering spirit when you're not at, say, Tennessee. But it's just good to see when someone goes through what you know is a pretty tough period for them, getting everything they ever wanted and then it not working out, to come back from it and to keep going and to look as happy as she kind of looks right now. Mm-hmm. Good to see. And, of course, I think a lot of Tennessee fans are hoping that she loses tomorrow night in Food City Center by 40 points, right? They want Tennessee to win. You should want your team to win, period.
I would hope so, yes.
You know, but it's nice to see that she's got – that she's in a pretty good place right now. And let me tell you, if that game does not go well for the Lady Vols – holy narrative, Tom Barclay.
I think everyone, like narrative. Everyone, kind of is thinking the same thing there. You know, there's a story there for sure.
and I don't think that had anything to do with Kim Caldwell's Sunday night mode, because she had just walked off the court after her team had lost by the biggest loss in program history,
mm-hmm,
on a very public stage to one of the best teams in the country, and just had been blitzed in the second half by UConn, just blitzed in the second half by South Carolina, did not have a chance. Team looked like for a while there, they just almost weren't playing hard. And if you're going to full court press and you're going to play a system, she said it herself, you play, all sports are played with energy being a part of it. There's no system in any sport where you're like, you know, this is designed to take it easy. No, that's not how it goes. Like, but especially when you go tempo and you push the issue and you make people uncomfortable and that's your DNA, you don't play hard in that system, it's a layup line. Because if you go out there and you're trying to press and you're trying to trap and you're trying to, you know, bat the ball out of there, cause chaos, but you're not playing hard, really hard, it is a pregame layup line is what that turns into. And so I think that was probably the only reason she felt the way she did after the game. But knowing the next game that was coming, I wonder if that's just a little bit there in the back of the head there. And Kelly did a good job of kind of swatting that away. And Kim, during her presser today, sort of kind of swatted that away and said, listen, obviously people know who she is and, you know, and what she's meant to this place. But, you know, we got to go play a game and all this. And we want to win. They want to win. Everybody's saying the right things. But, you know, the way that Kelly said, you know, that was a couple years ago and it was a tough time, but I've kind of moved on from it. And I'm thinking, you didn't all the way move on from that. Like, you didn't.
That would be rough to try to move on from.
But there's a lot of. I imagine that her team, will be playing exceptionally hard when they come into this game, and also, I would imagine that after they've been embarrassed, you would like to think the Lady Vols come out and play pretty hard. Also, you would like to think they would be doing that. And if they don't, and if they don't, and if this game goes the wrong way, you talk about a conversation you do not want to be having.
That is going to be a very,
that starts very, very
tough one weekend and then a very tough Monday next week.
That gets things, it's like at some point that would almost start to turn a conversation into a confrontation. Mm-hmm. That's when you go, you start pulling like that. That's, and I'm not saying it would be like, oh, she's on a hot seat then, but like, hey, things can change very quickly in this world. And it's right now, Tennessee athletics is at a point where you think of just kind of this time last year, you had a men's team that was in between Elite Eight runs, right? Had just finished one, going to the next one, almost got to the Final Four twice in a row. You had the football team in the college football playoff for the first time. And at this point, you still had what you thought was Nico Iamaleava going into a big year with you know, expectations. You had women's basketball bringing in one of the best classes in the country, playing an exciting style of ball. Mm-hmm. You had won, I think, the third time in a row, the SEC All-Sports Trophy. You were in pretty high cotton. You were feeling pretty good. And you look at now, tough year in football, men's basketball, wait till it ends.
Yeah, it's.
But it could be a frustrating season if it doesn't go well in the postseason. Women going through a little bit of it right now, still ranked, but going through it.
Yep.
And it's one of those moments where you just feel like somebody somewhere will have to take a fall for something. And you don't know who it is necessarily, but it, like the defensive coordinator for football, that's not a high enough, that's not enough grist for the mill for people right now. And if this thing, this is one of those moments tomorrow, that game, if it does not go well, then the conversation for the whole athletic department, you know, and then obviously we didn't mention that, you know, Tony Vitello is not here anymore. Now, again,
I was about to say, it's like there's just there. It's not necessarily all bad news bears, right?
You know, but had been going this way.
Exactly.
Undeniably.
There was this huge momentum that was happening there. And then it was like the wind just went.
And then all of a sudden.
Direction.
But hey, that's athletics. That's life.
It is.
There's a counterbalance. That's the way it is. But let us not lump baseball into that yet, because these fellas could go out
there's
there
plenty
and
be of optimism
very,
still with the baseball
very
team.
Good
still and, plenty of optimism there.
And we'll take a break right now, and then we'll come back and hear from one of the reasons that there's a lot of optimism for that, and that is the fact that Josh Elander is the head coach and they got a pretty darn good roster. We'll hear him we'll hear from him the next couple days, but we'll start again with this one today. And before we do that, we'll get to a break right here right now on 10 at 3. Yeah, you don't you don't ever want to feel like, and you don't want to project like fatalism, you know?
No, of course. And that's in, I feel like with the Lady Vols, especially right now, the last thing you want is the hype to turn toxic the exact opposite direction, because it can do that. It can 180 itself in a heartbeat if things do not go, you know, if there's just bad news after bad news after bad news, feels like poor decisions. Like, I just, it's tough. It's going to be tough for them to climb their way out of this one.
The most undeniable rule that I've learned in 25 plus years in this business, there are many things that I've learned. The number, probably, I might think about this and think, well, there's one thing I learned more than this. But I think as it stands right now, what I think is the most important thing that I've learned in this business, that fan bases, and hear me out here, fan bases are monsters. And what I mean by that is they're passionate, they're rabid, they want the best. Sports are in some ways their outlet from the other frustrations of life, and they want it to be a good time, and they want to be able to wear their schools or team's colors and point and laugh at the other people and beat their rivals and, you know, walk around the park or, you know, the dog park, the church, their kids' schools, wearing their school or team colors and saying, ha-ha, look at all you suckas, you know?
30 seconds, by the way.
But that monster has to be fed.
Yes.
And when you feed it success, you're still feeding it. That doesn't satiate the appetite ever. The monster stays hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you build a monster and you feed a monster, you just make a hungrier monster, and it's going to eat something. And if it can't eat the people that it's playing, mm-hmm. it will eat itself. It will eat you. That's the number one thing I think that I've learned in this business.
Oh, yeah. All right. Stand by, y'all.
Welcome back to 10 at 3. Wes Rucker here with Tom Barclay here on this Wednesday, February the 11th, 2026, talking a lot of things today. We're kind of running the gamut today. There's no eligibility news. Now, we'll have more of that later in the week, obviously, with the Joey Aguilar stuff going on the next couple of days. Obviously, Friday, that hearing, we'll have stuff on that. But you know what else happening on Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Opening day for Tennessee baseball. The Vols mm-hmm. hosting Nichols for three games. I believe the start times are scheduled for like, what, 4:30, 1:30, or 4:01, I believe, or 4:30, 1:01, maybe, I think, this weekend. They play the games earlier in the year because they try to be playing it while the sun's out, if you know what I mean, so it doesn't get even colder than normal.
That's true.
Although, and I say this every year, too, early in the year, baseball start times are always tentative, even with the turf field.
Yeah.
And you don't really worry about like thunderstorms this time of year. You worry about, is the field playable in a safe way? And so, you know, these times are always temporary. You know, they could be moving, but that's the plan for now, is to play it at those times.
But 4:30, 1:01.
There you go. I was right. How about that?
Yeah.
I could have turned the page and looked what I wrote down yesterday, but I was winging it.
You're trying to test your memory there.
You know, which is not what you would maybe call the most professional thing, but hey, this time it worked out. Got one in the win column.
Oh yeah.
Tennessee, speaking of wins, used to winning quite a bit in baseball these days. There's a new coach on the block. He's a name you know. He's a face you know. He's a voice you know. He is now in a new role. Well, he's been a head coach before, but only when you know. Tony Vitello had been ejected, which did happen from time to time. But Josh Elander is now the main man. He is the man with the big hat. He's got the big office, the big nice corner office. He is Tennessee's baseball's head coach, if I could say that correctly, coming into a big season where there are expectations again in this program, as there are every year, to compete at the very top, to get to the College World Series, to win a national championship. And what's interesting is if Tony Vitello were the head coach of this exact team with this exact roster, I think it would be a consensus top five team going into the year. I really do think that.
Oh, yeah.
But because it's Elander's first year, it's a little different. Some people have him in the top five, more of them have him in the top 10, some just outside the top 10. And hey, they're making the new guy prove it. So let's see how he'll go out there and prove that. But, by being the head coach now, we're going to hear his voice a lot more, including in this week's preseason presser. We obviously had him one-on-one in here not long ago with us here at 10 at 3, but he's faced the entire media corps earlier this week, and here's part of that earlier this week with Josh Elander.
How would you assess where you guys are as a team, kind of leaving preseason and officially going into game week with what's coming up this weekend?
Yeah, we're just excited to get going. I know the guys, it's been nice how the NCAA has opened it up. We've had a little bit more time, had to battle the weather a little bit, but had a good weekend. We were able to get outside three consecutive days, see those guys compete a little bit. But again, start of the season is here. We're excited. But again, this will be a process where I told the guys, hey, opening day is right around the corner, but this is, needs to be a deal. Hey, this is just the beginning of getting better and better as we go through the course of the year and then eventually get into SEC play.
Will look like this weekend?
Great question. Yes, we'll roll with Tegan Coons on Friday. We'll go Landon Mack on Saturday and then Evan Blanco on Sunday. I think that puts us in the best position to have success out of the gate. I think you can make the argument where you can mix and match those guys in any capacity, but it was pretty cool. Got to call those guys one by one last night and let them know, but total confidence in all three of those guys and their ability to throw the baseball.
What is y'all's plan for Blaine Brown going into the season in terms of managing him as a hitter and as a pitcher?
Yeah, he's just such a dynamic talent. I mean, you could argue he had the best weekend swinging the bat. I mean, the guy hits the ball regularly over 110 miles an hour. And then, you know, one thing we talked to him about is, again, that was a big part of his recruitment process, was what does the schedule look like and how am I in a position to have success on both sides of the ball? And we spent a ton of time kind of outlining different options, right? Because, again, do you start? Do you come out of the pen? Does he go from left field and then come in? So what we went with yesterday was a pretty good little trial. We went with the pitcher DH. So he opened up the game, and he was 93-95 with over 7 foot of extension, really kind of cutting it loose. That velo ticked up a little bit. And then that gives him the freedom to then kind of just go to DH. So it's, hey, focus, go get us some outs. So there's some opener capabilities there. Full confidence him able to start. But then also I like the idea of, hey, maybe he comes in out of left field at one point. And again, there's a lot of options we can do there, but a lot of that with Blaine will just be just communicating with him on how he's feeling, and it's just dynamic talent on both sides of the ball. He does. I mean, Tracy, you know, takes Krenzel deep off the batter's eye the other day. It's really sneaky power. He's backwards, as we say in the scouting world. He's a right-handed hitter, left-handed pitcher, but just sneaky power, you know, from Texas. There's some good toughness there. Comes from a great family, but Ren and Stovall have done an amazing job with him to get a little bit more vert on the fastball. And again, it's amazing the difference between 14 to 15 and 19 to 20, what that can do to hitters. So again, he actually got hit in the hand with the pitch. So he's working through some of that. We'll hold our breath a little bit, but it's a true two-way talent. There's no doubt.
Yeah, Josh, where do you envision kind of Brandon Arvidsson's role on this pitching staff? Is that a Swiss Army sort of weapon? And do you expect him ready to go at the start of the season?
So he threw, you know, he's a little bit behind, but he threw last week in a pen, and honestly, I thought he looked like a major leaguer. It's the best I've ever seen him throw indoors, right? So, again, he's a little bit behind in his progression. We'll see. You know, he's going to get through this week and see what he's capable of doing. I think he's more than capable of taking the ball as a starter. I know that was a conversation we had in the summer last year. We're talking about coming back or not. But, again, I think he's a guy that just from this new coaching spot I'm in, it just gives me a lot of confidence because he's, you know, Chuck and I have talked about he's kind of matchup proof, right? It's just such a tough look. He can get righties and lefties out. The breaking ball is a true swing and miss. And then I just think the maturity has taken a big jump where everything just seems slower for him this year in comparison to last year. But we'll be very, very take it slow with him. Make sure he's got his feet underneath him. He's built up the right way because he's a true weapon for us.
How are the freshmen who got significant playing time last year, like Levi Manny, how are they different heading into this season than compared to last?
Well, that's what you hope as a coaching staff is those guys make a jump. Usually it's between freshman and sophomore year. And then, you know, Manny, the one thing I talk with him about is, like, if you're going to play in the middle of the field, you need to run the show. Like, you need to over-communicate. Also, we need to tell him, like, hey, be quiet. You're talking too much, right? So that really that's never going to happen. But he's done a great job just kind of commanding the field. And then Levi, again, has been awesome, balancing, catching, and playing first. I think just guys respect those guys because they've played in the league. They know what it's like, but they also were very lucky where some of our better players are some of our best people, too. So it's easy for our young guys to have the example to look up to. And in our program, we always talk about competition is king. Internal should be every single day. You know, there's somebody right next to you, behind you, in front of you that's capable of doing it at the same level. But at the same time, those guys have been great teammates in making sure this freshman class is really talented, bringing those guys along too and making sure they're getting better along the way.
Josh, in the time that you've been here, this program has turned into one that can compete for an SEC title. Omaha is a realistic expectation. How do you handle like those big picture conversations in February, or do you mention those things to the guys this early?
Great question. I think, again, too, a easy reminder is what all the resources we have been blessed with here at Tennessee. When the guys walk in the stadium each day, one of my themes has been don't take this for granted. I mean, we're going to play in one of the best setups in college baseball now, so that's a pretty easy reminder. You don't build a stadium like that unless you plan on playing postseason baseball in there. So, again, that's one thing I've kind of talked with them about. But also, too, like, we're in February. You know, we still got internal competition, attacking each day. Next task has been a big deal. We've talked about a bunch. But I think our guys have that more in the back of their mind. But they've been good with focus, just, again, getting a little bit better each day as we're going to this weekend. And then the season gets rolling here pretty quick.
That was the first part of the preseason presser there with newly minted Tennessee head baseball coach Josh Elander, of course, the guy who's been the associate head coach for a while there, helped Tony Vitello build that thing from the ground up, quite literally in some cases, that with the stadium. When you look at what they walked into facility-wise and what they're rolling in now, it's pretty outstanding. I know we're going to have another piece on that at some point this week. I think Lauren Davis, one of our very talented journalist in this building, is working on some stuff with that as a heads up. And he did mention there, Elander did mention that at least the first weekend's starting rotation has been set. No surprise with Tegan Coons being the opening day starter. And I'm not really surprised either that it's Landon Mack, the transfer right there, the sophomore right-hander who Tony Vitello and Josh Elander and Frank Anderson and Josh Reynolds and all those guys worked their tails off to get to Tennessee. He'll be the Saturday guy. And then another transfer coming in, really intriguing guy, Evan Blanco, the lefty from Virginia, who 2 years ago was the ace on a Virginia team that did get to the College World Series last season. Still struck out a lot of guys, still looked pretty good, but he's coming back from an injury. He's battled injury issues. He was really good when he was out there, struck out a lot of guys, but he's a guy who can play the game. And I think him being a Sunday starter, I mean, you're talking about a rotation of guys on the Friday and Saturday who could be first-round draft picks, and then on Sunday, a guy who's been the ace on a team that got to Omaha. So you can see right quick from the beginning why I think at least you could make a really good argument that Tennessee, some people having the Vols outside the top 10 seems a little silly going into the season. Again, though, college baseball's got some dudes now. It's more talented than it's ever been. The SEC, yeah. We know what the league's all about. A lot of good teams in the ACC, too. Some good teams out west. I know UCLA has got a bunch of, you know, potential first, second-round draft picks this season. There's some good competition out there. But there's a lot in this team that I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about. I don't think it'll be quite as different as people think it is. The outward-facing, the front window, is going to look a little different when you're window shopping because Elander's going to be the man just a couple feet to the left from where he's been the past couple years. He's still going to be the third base coach, though. And you don't have Frank Anderson out there being the good old, you know, just the old school kind of hard baseball man that he is. He's with Tony Vitello with the Giants now. He is obviously his predecessor or his successor, though, is someone who was brought here a couple years ago to succeed him, being Josh Reynolds. So nothing really new there. And what I'm interested in, really quickly, I'll say this, there's a lot more two-way players on this Tennessee team this season, and that's going to be a fun new wrinkle. And that's something we might talk about a little bit more in the next couple of days because, you know, Drew Gilbert did it a little bit, but not really. You know, when he was at Tennessee, he came as a pitcher. Funny enough, he came as a pitcher, and now he'll be a starting outfielder for the Giants. But came as a two-way guy, but mostly as a pitcher at first. And then he's like, hey, you know what, let him play out there and hit too. Tennessee's got some guys, Blaine Brown, some guys this season that are really good-looking two-way prospects, and I think this coaching staff is going to be a lot more interested in letting two-way prospects be two-way prospects, which is something that Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson were always a little bit reticent to do. So that will be fun. We'll talk a little bit more about those guys tomorrow. We'll talk about a Tennessee basketball performance against Mississippi State. We'll maybe say a little bit more about that Lady Vols matchup against Kelly Harper, and then Joey Aguilar. That's coming up the next day, the hearing. Tomorrow's going to be a day where I don't know if an hour is going to be enough, but we're going to try to make it work. I'll talk as quickly as I can while trying to enunciate. We'll try to do as much as we can tomorrow. But thank you to Tom for being here. Thank you all for watching, listening. We'll see you next time.